You're listening to the Ideal Business Show with Pat Rigsby. This is the place where fitness entrepreneurs come to learn how to earn more income, have more impact, and enjoy more freedom. Now, here's your host, Pat Rigsby.
Pat Rigsby here with another episode of the Ideal Business Show, and today I have my good friend and industry expert, Eric Cressy. I mean, I'm sure that you're quite familiar with Eric at this point, you know, through his speaking, his writing, the great work that he's done at Cressy Sports Performance, the products that he's created. I mean, he has really kind of done it all as it relates to, you know, being a leader in the industry and then also, you know, a day-to-day coach who is bringing out the best in the, you know, the hundreds of athletes that he serves. So welcome, Eric.
Thank you very much. Good to be on.
So, Eric, I mean, I've had the good fortune to kind of both be a friend and, you know, also play witness to, you know, the way that you and your business have evolved over the past decade and, you know, the impact that you've had, the reach that you've had. So would you mind taking a few minutes to kind of give a little bit of the backstory or a little bit of background on Eric Cressy and Cressy Sports Performance?
Yeah, I'll give you the 15-second elevator pitch in way more than 15 seconds, I guess. I started out actually thinking I was going to be an accountant. So I went to Babson College out of high school and was totally under the impression that the CPA route was what was going to be the right path for me. And it just so happened that my senior in high school, I had basically been prepping to play college soccer. And in the process of doing that, really got into my fitness and started training harder and harder and really taking care of my diet. And what was interesting is it was a kind of a thing where I was training hard, trying to become a higher performing athlete. And I actually basically overdid it and wound up with kind of your exercise addiction, eating disorder, and really messed my body up pretty good. So it really, you know, ruined my chances of playing college soccer. But what it did do in the process, it made me realize, hey, here's how you exercise better and here's how you eat better and take care of your body. So I kind of had to go through this period of putting a lot more weight back on the right way and learning how to take care of myself. And that kind of happened over my first 2 years of undergrad while I was at Babson. And I realized that it was something I was much more passionate about than, you know, just looking at debits and credits and balance sheets. So after my sophomore year, I transferred from Babson to the University of New England. It was kind of a double thing in the sense that, one, it gave me exposure to an exercise science curriculum, and I was able to transfer all my business credits in and get a double major in sports and fitness management to go with it. But I think also, just as importantly, it allowed me, A, to live at home so that I was still kind of getting my health back and rebounding and all that. I had a little bit more of a, you know, I guess, predictable environment. And then just as importantly, it was when I started working out of a gym, and I was fortunate to have a guy in my hometown who really took me under his wing and kind of mentored me and put me in a good position to start my coaching career in that realm at age 20. So kind of just one of those situations where all the stars aligned. After I finished up at UNE, I went to University of Connecticut to do my master's degree. I did a master's in kinesiology with a concentration in exercise science, and that was where I got my first taste of strength and conditioning in the college sector and really, you know, realized that I wanted to be a strength and conditioning coach as opposed to, you know, like kind of your typical personal trainer or, you know, working in the research setting or whatever it may be. So I had a good experience at UConn, and when I left UConn, I made the decision to go to the private sector as opposed to staying in college strength and conditioning. And, you know, one thing led to another, and, you know, here we are basically 11 years later with two facilities, one in Massachusetts, one in Florida. We train baseball players from all 30 major league organizations. We see guys at just about every Olympics. So we've, you know, had kind of like this long list of success that in large part actually kind of came about by accident, just because I was a perfect example of kind of luck is where preparation meets opportunity. So I knew what I wanted to do, and the stars just aligned the right way when the opportunities came about. things worked out well. And in fact, my freshman year roommate from Babson is actually now my business partner, Pete, here in our Massachusetts facility. So, in addition to what we do with our actual, Crescent Sports Performance brand, I also do a lot of writing, speaking, consulting, in other avenues. So I'm kind of a guy that wears quite a few different hats on a daily basis, but, certainly really enjoy it.
So you mentioned the kind of luck meeting, meeting opportunity, obviously, I think you've capitalized on so many of the opportunities that most people miss, but none of the success you've had. I mean, going from, just an aspiring strength and conditioning coach to, having two facilities, impacting, so many different athletes and then so many different coaches as well. How did you get started opening up your first, getting Cressy Sports Performance, or at the time Cressy Performance? How did that happen? How did that get started?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was actually really somewhat of a dynamic of timing. When I finished my master's, or towards the end, I was fortunate. A guy named Chris West, who was the associate head of strength and conditioning at the University of Connecticut, along with Tina Murray, who's now at the University of Louisville. Both of them were really, really good about really taking me under their wing and mentoring me and giving me opportunities in that realm. And actually, Chris and also Dr. Kramer, our department at UConn, had actually gotten some phone calls about opportunities in the college realm. And, I was seriously considering going that route just because I had a lot of experience in college basketball. And I actually interviewed with a facility in Connecticut that was really interested in getting a kind of like a young athlete training program off the ground. And I liked the idea of being close to UConn so that I could still go back and be involved. And we were kind of doing some stuff with NBA Combine Prep with some of the guys. So I liked the idea of staying involved with those guys and continuing to learn. So I made the decision to stay in the private sector there. And, I was there for about 9 months and realized that it was probably not the right place for me, in the sense that it was kind of the scenario where I envisioned myself going there, kind of building a population of young athletes and training them there. And instead I kind of wound up not, unfortunately by any means, but just dealing with a lot of adult clients one-on-one and at a fully booked schedule, within a matter of just a couple of weeks. So, it was a great opportunity to make some money, to coach a lot of people, get some experience and everything, get myself out of student debt and things like that. But I realized long-term it wasn't for me. And, the opportunity came up to work in Massachusetts, as an independent contractor. And, so I moved up here with zero clients on August 1st, 2006. And, business just really took off. And as it kind of coincided with my business partner, Pete, finishing his MBA, in the spring of 2006. Spring of 2007. So he had also kind of experienced coming and trained with us and, put on a bunch of weight. And so we'd always kind of talked about, maybe doing something. And so the opportunity came up and, we opened Crescent Sports Performance. So what was good about it is, it wasn't like we were starting from scratch in the new facility. I actually had, existing clientele, quite a few baseball guys I had started working with. And, that allowed us to kind of hit the ground running when we opened up. What I think is really important for a lot of people to remember is that they walk into the facilities now and they see, 15,000 square feet in Massachusetts. They see 7,700 square feet in Florida. They see the New Balance logo and nicely decorated walls. They see all the equipment. They see an athlete lounge and a staff lounge. Our actually lounge in our office is bigger than our original facility. So we started out in 3,300 square feet. It was kind of like this inconvenient candy cane shape where you had blind spot to your coaching, but we started small. We had a very manageable rent. We made it possible to be successful in the early going and get some momentum on our side. So about actually just under a year after moving in July of 07, we opened up. In May of 2008, we had actually outgrown that space. And so we moved about 3 miles west in the town of Hudson, to a larger space that was 6,600 square feet, and kind of didn't bite off more than we could chew. Eventually we did a slight expansion to go to 7,600 square feet to take on more office space. And then ultimately went to 15,000 square feet when our landlord kind of gave us an offer that we couldn't refuse on a nice spot in our building and something really showcase what we did. So, I think we were smart in the sense that we never, got out over our skis. We managed our growth conservatively, and basically didn't bite off more than we could chew in terms of rent, taking on way too much staff early on, anything like that. So, I think that level of fiscal responsibility has served us really well over the course of time. And I think you know, honestly, beyond just like the training environment and individualization and the expertise and stuff like that, if you were a business consultant and you walked into our office, the things that would probably surprise you relative to other gyms is how well we know our numbers, how meticulous we track things on the back end. And that's not something I generally see in the fitness industry. So that's a place where we've been able to differentiate ourselves.
I think you guys, as well or better than anybody, actually run your business like a business rather than just kind of tolerate as few of the nuances of being a real business as most people in the industry do. So with that kind of path for your growth, you know, one of the things that obviously you've become so well known for is, you know, really having a strong niche market in baseball, not just that you train, you know, a lot of baseball athletes now, but you're also, you know, an educator in that realm. I mean, I went through the mentorship that you had, which was, you know, extraordinary, but you present on the topic. I mean, you're essentially, you know, really on the leading edge of what goes on in the strength and conditioning world in baseball. And, you know, as you mentioned in the beginning, you know, you weren't necessarily a baseball guy. So how did that happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I played baseball up until eighth grade. My dad was a third baseman. And when it came time to come to high school, I was actually a much better tennis player. So I went that route because they were in the same season. I'm a firm believer that if you look at any really successful business, it's all about solving a problem. Like I use the TRX story as an example. You know, Randy Hetrick's the founder, and Randy was a Navy SEAL on a submarine trying to figure out a way to maintain a training effect. So he threw some straps over a pipe and started doing inverted rows and pull-ups and things. So, you know, he solved the problem for himself and then saw a market for it. I think in our world, when I first moved to Boston back in 06, I started working with some baseball guys. And what was astounding to me was how underserved they were. There was, you know, kind of your classic, hey, here's the football program. Just go squat, bench, and clean. You'll be good to go. And then at the other end of the spectrum, there was like the ready-to-print rotator cuff programs that have been photocopied 800 times since the 1970s. So there was this huge gap where, you know, baseball players were being, you know, haphazardly managed, or they were being kind of like coddled. And I was a firm believer that you can actually push these guys really hard if you understand their unique adaptations, their injury histories, and, you know, kind of the functional demands of the sport. So we tried to really, you know, cater to their individual needs. And as that happened, we realized, hey, this is something that really has, you know, a market that can support it. Like, this isn't like we're trying to train bikini models in Northern Alaska, you know, like there's enough baseball players around to do it. And what was even probably more interesting for us was that we realized that because of the combination of expertise, but also through my writing, my consulting, my speaking, having more of a national presence, it was easy to get the word out so that, you know, instantly we had people from California who were flying out here to learn as much as they could and kind of do a crash course over 4 days. And we had people, you know, we had four kids from like Alabama who a couple summers ago, like all drove up from junior college, rented a house in Worcester and trained all summer. So like when we started to realize that there's a market far beyond just our local town, that was where the niche really became possible. And what you realize is it also creates, you know, problems in the sense that you have a seasonal business and stuff like that. But if you understand how to be the industry leader, because you've created that niche, it certainly puts you in a better position to weather storm when things are quieter and stuff like that. And that's where, you know, some of the mentorships came from, some of the product development, and opportunities in that realm.
That's a pretty interesting segue, because I think that, you know, most people don't think about the product development in that way, right? A lot of them think in terms of, hey, wait a minute, I'm just doing something well, I'm going to document it and maybe reduce my training load or something like that. But in many regards, you kind of approach the creation of a product the same way that you just alluded to the foundation of a successful business. You solved a problem. Yeah. So can you talk a little bit more about, you know, the mentorships, the products, and the role they play in your business?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think selfishly, it was a way for us to find places to whom we could refer athletes around the country. Because what we'd invariably get, without a doubt, every week we probably get 4 to 5 emails that are either, hey, you should open a facility in Pittsburgh or Minnesota or New Mexico. You know, there's a great market here for it. or you get an email that says, hey, is there someone that does what you do in Oregon? You know, like they want people that are right in the street. And we're so kind of niched and specialized. Like it's really hard to truly illustrate that to, you know, folks who are kind of casual observers to exercise physiology and strength conditioning. You know, if you have a kid that has like thoracic outlet syndrome, or you've got a stress fracture in his lower back or something like that, we've seen those guys, you know, 400 or 500 times by now. So we know kind of that we have this pretty good sample size where we can really help you. And if not, we can certainly get you connected with the right professionals in our region to help the cause. So that side of it was one of the guiding reasons, honestly, for the mentorships was, hey, it's a way for us to build our network nationwide so that when I have a guy who's in high A and needs soft tissue work in the Florida State League, hey, this is the guy I know here, where, wherever it may be. So that was helpful. But I think building on that, I think what we also realized was that we have a very good team approach where, you know, myself and our coaches here work hand in hand with Matt Blake, who's our pitching coordinator, and, you know, Eric Schoenberg is a great rehabilitation specialist, you know, who may see guys during physical therapy after Tommy John, whatever it may be. So we have a very good team approach where there's really no egos. And I think that was something that is a model that needs to be employed more, you know, not just in baseball, but across all realms. So it was something that we wanted to teach. And, you know, we've had volleyball coaches come and take our courses. We've had, you know, swimming coaches, things like that. So what I think is really interesting about the mentorship, though, is it teaches across disciplines. You'll see pitching coaches, physical therapists, athletic trainers, strength coaches, parents, chiropractors coming and taking it. And there's something for everybody, but I think what's just as important is they see the areas of common interest, right? They see the commonalities instead of just the differences, so that it allows them to kind of, I guess, be empowered to create their own networks, whether they're in Wisconsin or Texas or Alabama or whatever it may be.
Okay, so that's the in-facility side of what you do that goes beyond just kind of the work you do training athletes. Can you talk a little bit more about the role that the information products and some of the online stuff that you've personally done, you know, the role that plays in your business?
Absolutely. So one of the things I talk about is you can do kind of like the mind map for the whole Eric Cressy brand that ties together, you know, what we do at the facility with what we do with information products, with what we do with writing and all these different things and consulting opportunities and everything. They're all very much interrelated. One of the things I can say is when I write less, my income goes down. So effectively that means that there's less people in California reading my blog who are interested in a one-time consult at Cressy Sports Performance. There's fewer athletic trainers in, you know, Nebraska who are interested in our functional stability training series. You know, there's a million different things out there that, you know, kind of can be impacted by the fact that I might not be as active, whether it's in writing on my blog, writing elsewhere, or even just social media activity and stuff like that. So that's very much kind of like the, I guess, the thing that drives a lot of it, particularly on the nationwide scale. That won't necessarily heavily impact as much in terms of like local stuff, right? So like somebody from a town over, whether I write a blog that goes out to my whole newsletter list or not, doesn't necessarily play into it, but the social media stuff certainly does. Any kind of like local press we get, stuff along those lines will drive the facility. So I look at writing very much as a lead generator. It's something that also helps with lead conversion indirectly because it's one more way for people to perceive our expertise. So you might have someone that reaches out to the facility and says, hey, my son had a lat strain. He's a college pitcher in Texas. You know, we're thinking about coming up, and, you know, my business partner can say, hey, no problem. We've seen guys like this all the time. Here's an article Eric actually wrote all about lat strains last week. And it'd be a, you know, a great way for them to perceive it in a different context. So, you know, I think everyone kind of perceives that expertise in different ways. Some people want to interact with you and ask you questions. Some people want to watch you coach. Some people want to, you know, see a promo video on YouTube. Some people want to interact with other clients you train to get their take on it. So it's one more way for us to establish to them that we're the right fit for them. So I think that's a really big part of it. So the writing kind of drives a whole bunch of other stuff, whether it's DVD, other product development. It's also seminar stuff. So, you know, I've been fortunate to kind of build a pretty good following. So if I decide, hey, I'm going to do a seminar in St. Louis later this summer, I know I can direct mail people in, you know, Missouri and Kansas and, you know, surrounding regions and let them know, hey, I'm doing a talk here. So, you know, I remember Ryan Lee a long, long time ago saying, if, you know, if my house burned to the ground, I lost everything, as long as I have my list, I'm okay. So I think that certainly, you know, makes a lot of sense. And the more ways you have to get in touch with people, the better. So having a good Instagram following, Facebook following, Twitter following, newsletter following, you know, all that stuff really, really helps. Like I was joking the other day, I didn't even realize it. Like I always have used YouTube videos as a means of supporting blog content. So the videos were a way to break up text or maybe to make a point easier to make. Instead of listing out all kinds of geeky anatomy terms, I could literally point to somebody's elbow and say, here's what's going on. And I just looked the other day, I'm like, wow, I have 32,000 subscribers on YouTube. I never even realized I had that many. So I think when you build a following, you can leverage them in different ways. And it's also a way to make it easier for clients to refer people to you. Like it's funny. I was, a couple of years ago when we were about to announce, Cressy Sports Performance, you know, I kind of like went out of my way to talk to some of our, you know, guys saying, hey, what do you think about a Florida facility? Do you think those would work? And, Brandon Gomes is one of our long-term athletes. He's originally from Massachusetts and was playing for the Tampa Bay Rays. And I remember asking about it because he was in Tampa and he would always come back home and visit his parents and stay there and train with us for a week. And then I'd kind of watch over him from afar. And, you know, I was kind of talking about it. He's like, man, everybody knows about you. It's like you guys are reading your stuff on their iPad, like after BP, when we're in the clubhouse getting a pregame meal. So, you know, they're just not coming to Massachusetts. So, you know, basically you need a way to make it more accessible to them. So we'd already generated leads. They were existing leads, you know, lead conversion in that case was making something more geographically feasible to them. And sure enough, you know, the day in July of 2014, we announced our facility in Florida, like the phone rang off the hook with, you know, we had multiple big league guys call us that afternoon saying, oh man, I can't wait for this. You know, I've had my teammate who's trained with you guys in the past and he raves about it. But, you know, all that online stuff, you know, basically made it much, much easier for us to initially make contact with these people, and ultimately convert them. And it's honestly one reason why it drives me bonkers when I hear about someone in our industry who's struggling with their business and they're like, yeah, I'm not a social media guy, or, you know, I don't write. I'm like, well, then you might not survive because that's the direction that the industry is going.
Yeah. I think people kind of fall into this trap and, you know, and I see it over and over, this follow your passion rather than play to and develop your strengths and solve a problem. I think that's where the business success lies. And obviously, you know, I mean, you've got a multitude of strengths, but, you know, disseminating high quality content, sharing the, you know, the stuff that you're learning and practically applying on a daily basis. I mean, obviously that's a strength, but that didn't just happen overnight. I mean, you started out as an accounting major.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's funny too. And, I actually had a mom who actually emailed me one day and she said, I'm pretty sure the only strength and conditioning coach I know who knows how to correctly use a semicolon. I'm like, people will perceive your expertise in a million different ways. But I mean, to your point, like, be honest, like I don't have any unique gifts. Like I really do mean that. Like I might maybe pick things up a little quicker, but that's in large part because I'm very passionate about it. And I'm very hard on myself if I don't know something, but like, and this is going to be like a long sob story, but like I went home, actually during my grad degree at UConn. And, I remember being in the kitchen on like a Friday night with my mom. And my mom is like the Mother Teresa of my hometown. Like we go to the grocery store and all these parents come up and thank her because she's been a teacher at the high school that I went to, since 1986. And she's actually a principal there now, but I can remember distinctly like her just like having a beer casually on a Friday night. My mom like never drinks or anything like that. So she was having a beer and it was like, I remember it was like Budweiser. It was just not really great beer. And I was like, Mom, you know, you're an administrator now. You can drink good beer. She's like, I never did drink good beer. We could never afford it. I was like, what? And she kind of like told me the story about how growing up, like, I mean, there were days like there was a Thanksgiving where like we couldn't even afford like canned goods. My mom was waiting on a check from the babysitting she did to be able to go and buy Thanksgiving dinner for the next day. Like, and the crazy part about it was I never knew. Like my brother and I were as happy as could be. we never knew that any of that was like going on. We just, I mean, I guess happiness consists not of having great possessions, but in having few wants. But I look back on it, I'm like, we didn't go on elaborate vacations. Like, you know, I went to Disney when I was in second grade with my dad when I was on a business trip. And, you know, that was kind of like it. We never like went to Europe or anything like that. And I don't fault my parents at all for it because, you know, we were happy. Like they figured out a way for my, you know, my brother to get tennis lessons and me to go to soccer camp. And we were very fortunate. We were very loved. But I look back on it and it's not like I came from like this otherworldly like privilege where, you know, they sent me off to like, you know, camp after camp after camp to train me for this. But what my parents really did do for me is they taught me work ethic. My dad, you know, was co-founder along with my grandpa of a school bus distributorship. So I grew up cleaning floors of school buses before they were delivered to school districts. I can remember my dad leaving the house like in the middle of the night to go write bids, proposals to school district. I can remember my mom, you know, at high, you know, correcting papers every night in bed off the clock. I can remember her having students who couldn't afford to eat and she would be like giving them crackers for breakfast at her desk at school. And it taught me a lot about, you know, the level of, you know, consistency you need to have. Like you need to show up every day. You need to not take days off. You need to genuinely care about people. You need to, you know, build a culture where people, you know, really look to you as a resource to help them. And you go on, you stand on your head to find ways to over deliver. Like it's very easy to be a school teacher who just shows up and the bell rings at the beginning of the day and then goes home at, you know, 2:10 when the last bell ends. But like, she was someone who was always going above and beyond. Like we've had kids who had no place to stay, who have lived at our house. And like, that's the kind of people that my parents were, and that's who they've raised me to be. And I think it's, without even realizing it, it's taught me how to run a business. Like I want people to be part of a family. I want them to be happy and I want them to think about what they have going for them and recognize that we're resources in their corner.
You know, I think that's so important because, you know, one of the challenges that I know I face when I talk about creating your ideal business is clarifying that creating your ideal business is building and pursuing, not just having. Mm-hmm. And it's not a lifestyle business. It's building a business that allows you to have the type of impact that you want and be compensated for it in a fair way. I mean, we earn what we get.
Yeah.
And it's not so much a freedom thing as much as a flexibility thing. And so it's so valuable when a message like what you just shared comes through, because I know that so many fitness entrepreneurs out there see what Cresty Sports Performance is today and they immediately say, well, I want that. But they tend to overlook or at least minimize the journey to getting there, and they're not paying attention to all the things that it takes to sustain it and grow it. You know, when people, I've had on a few occasions, and I don't know if I've ever shared this with you, I've had on a few occasions people kind of suggest that, well, Eric doesn't really market. I'm like, well, apparently you don't pay much attention to social media, right?
I just don't pay for marketing. There's a huge difference.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's, you know, you out there playing to your strengths, and the strengths being delivering, you know, great information and then outworking other people.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there are probably a laundry list of other strengths we could talk about. But those two, I mean, it's right in front of people literally every week. I mean, you hit people's inbox every week. You're on social media every week, and it's not just once a week. You're consistent and you show up where your prospective clients and your current clients are. And I mean, it's just a matter of time before you're perceived as the authority. And I hope people understand and appreciate the diligence and effort that go into that.
Yeah, I think, so it's interesting. Every semester of interns, I always make a point. I have a presentation I do called The Top 10 Financial Mistakes Bonehead Trainers Make. And it's like a combination of not hiring an accountant, not understanding like appreciable assets versus depreciable assets, not understanding, you know, job-specific tax deductions, things like that. And every time I give that presentation, I say, and I look around the room and I say, how many of you guys want to open your own facility? And invariably, like I've kept a running tab, over 80% say they want to open their own place. So it's mind-numbing to me. And literally I spend the next hour saying, you're probably an idiot if you think you're ready for it. And I genuinely talk them out of it. And don't get me wrong, we've had former interns who are doing an awesome job, you know, in various places around the country and do phenomenally. I think what we really, really have to be careful of, and you know, the kind of classic intern that we see are guys who are just wrapping up their undergrad. They dropped $250,000 on an exercise science degree or something, and they're swimming in 80 grand in student loan debt. And what I really try to say as tactfully as I possibly can is that the world does not owe you anything, absolutely nothing, because you think that you took on this level of debt and you invested this much time and all that stuff. You know what? There's no guarantee that you are going to have an awesome job waiting for you or anything like that. Because I know that I hired Greg Robbins and he is an absolute stud at our facility. Greg has one semester of college under his belt. He probably learned more for free in the Marines that made him a successful coach here than he could have ever gotten in any exercise science program across the country. My business partner, Brian, has a year at Notre Dame under his belt. When he went there as a baseball player, he basically had thoracic outlet before it was cool, never finished his degree, but he's a stud coach. Like, he can speak the language with injured throwers. These guys have unique skill sets that you can't just get from a curriculum. So when we hire, it's not much different than when you open a facility. When we hire for competency and we hire for fit. So from a pure competency standpoint, the chances of an undergraduate curriculum teaching you exactly what you need to know to be successful as either an employee or as an owner are incredibly low. There's just too many subtle intricacies to any job that you take on. There's always going to be a learning curve when you take on a new job. One of the reasons we hire exclusively from our internship program is because we also need to evaluate fit. From a competency standpoint, I know that over the course of a 3 to 4 month internship, I can make anybody competent in our model. If they've got a good foundation of knowledge, they're willing to learn, and they go through everything that we put in front of them, and we really challenge them, and they respond well, they're going to be competent and able to coach in our environment. But that doesn't speak to fit. You know, there are going to be people who just for whatever reason aren't a good fit with our staff. Maybe that from a geographic standpoint, they don't want to live in the Northeast during the winter, or they don't want to live in Florida during the hot summers. Those are all the different things that go into fit. So you need to have both. But I think you go an extra step further when you talk about opening your own place, because there has to be competency to be able to be both a technician and an entrepreneur and a manager. If you look at like the old Michael Gerber E-Myth approach, you also have to have the fit. You need to be willing to make sacrifices in the rest of your life. You need to know that your wife or significant other is probably going to be really angry at you for getting home late 3 to 4 nights a week for those first couple of years. You're going to have to make sacrifices in terms of the amount of time you spend with your kids and your family and all this stuff. You're going to have to give up your hobby, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you have to be ready to make those sacrifices to make sure you're a good fit for entrepreneurship. But then after you've gone through all that stuff to say that you're qualified to even attempt to be a business owner, then you have to have financial wherewithal. When we opened Cressy Sports Performance, people don't know this. I graduated from University of Connecticut with $40,000 worth of student loans. I literally knew that there was going to come a day when I wanted to open my own place. So I literally saved like a chipmunk. I made a DVD. I wrote a book. I did everything I possibly could, personal trained 50 hours a week to clear that debt as fast as I could. And on my 25th birthday, I wrote a check to clear my student loan debt. And it was the smartest thing I ever did because it put me in a position to start saving to open. So that when the time came to open our gym, I hadn't sunk 10 grand a year into going to the bars and drinking. I hadn't blown money on things I couldn't afford. I was still driving the same old crappy Honda Accord that I had been driving for a while to put myself in a position to, when we decided to open up, to do it the way I wanted to. So we spent $127,000 of my savings in 2007. It was what it took to open the gym up, from flooring to turf to equipment to office renovations. We did about 30 grand in renovations, power racks, computers, printers, all this stuff. And it was something that I knew was coming, so I invested it. And in hindsight, if you look at what it takes when you invest into a business, you're not just trying to make your $127,000 back. You're competing against whatever that $127,000 would have done if you had just put it into stocks and bonds, right? So you need it to double over the course of the next 7 or 8 years if you look at like historical rate of return. So by 2014, I needed to have $254,000 at the very least to justify that investment in my business. But building on top of that, there's an opportunity cost to what my 7 years of employment had done. I probably could have been a $50,000 a year personal trainer, not working all that hard over those times. So those 7 years, that $350,000 of revenue. So add the $250,000 to the $350,000, and you're basically saying, I've got to clear $700,000 in this 7 to 8 years to make this a worthwhile endeavor. And then just when you think you're done doing all the calculations, you got to realize, oh yeah, I'm going to give up a lot of time with family and friends. I'm going to lose a lot of sleep over all this stuff. And my life could really suck in a lot of ways in the first, especially 2 to 3 years of doing this. But you do it because you expect your business to be around for 100 years, not because you're just trying to get through your 3 to 5 year lease or anything like that. So what it speaks to is I have no problem taking a really good paycheck right now. We've earned it. You know, I'm the one that took on all the risk. I'm the one that busted my hump and sunk everything I had into the business back in 2007. And likewise, my business partner, Pete, I think average starting salary was for an MBA out of Babson was $88,000 back in 2007 when we opened up. You know, and if you look at inflation, he walked away from a guaranteed six-figure position right when all that happened to come and work for a guaranteed payment of $2,000 a month until we hit break-even. So Pete made $2,000 a month for the first 17 months that we were in business in exchange for his equity, and now he does much better. But like, that's the thing people don't realize. They walk in, they see a well-oiled machine, and my business partner says it best. He goes, we make it look easy. That's the problem. They come in here, they see us wearing sweatpants to work. I get to bring my dog with me. You know, there's, you know, loud music playing in the background. We've got an MLB game on in the office. There's New Balance kicks everywhere. Like, there's, it's a cool place to be. But the 22-year-old kid who's just out of his internship doesn't get that it's really damn hard. And it's even harder because I think the nature of the industry now is it's harder than ever to be a brick and mortar business. You know, it's a lot easier to be that online consulting guy who does $40,000 worth of year of online coaching, you know, pays $1,200 a month for, you know, the rent at their apartment and has a pretty mellow life that they do on their own clock. It's a lot different when, you're working while other people play working in this industry. So to take it a step further, the other calculation we didn't even mention is that I personally guaranteed the leases on both facilities. So that's a very hefty initiative. My life insurance policy, if I get hit by a bus today, it covers the mortgages on our two houses, and then it covers the leases on both those facilities. And then you hope that, you know, the rest is going to take care of your daughters and your wife so that she doesn't have to work if she's a single mom and all this stuff. So there are a lot of factors that go into this that to the casual observer who walks in and hears Rage Against the Machine playing and guys deadlifting, like, they don't think about that. So it's one of the things that we try to make them aware about them.
That may very well have been the best education that somebody could get through all this. You know, normally at this stage of, you know, of one of these podcasts, I'd say, well, hey, do you have two or three things that somebody who's in, you know, maybe an early stage entrepreneur, or they've kind of flatlined in their business and they're trying to build something better, you know, some lessons, some takeaways, some insights. And I feel like the better question now would be, well, is there anything else you would have to add?
I got two things. The first one is there are two kind of people we have never, ever, ever failed on in the hiring process, whether it's for an internship or for an actual job. You will never, ever, ever have problems with someone who come from a background of self-employment. So I'll give you an example. Brian St. Pierre was our first employee. Brian's dad owns a paint store in Lewiston, Maine. Brian was a stud. He revolutionized the way we approach nutrition in our facility. Our clients adored him. Brian's wife got a residency in the dental world back in Maine. He decided to go back to his master's degree. That's the only reason he left. And I wrote him a glowing recommendation and called John Berardi personally. He's basically like John Berardi's right-hand man now. Like, Brian is awesome, and he learned it all because he busted his butt at his dad's paint store growing up. We've had a ton of really good interns and coaches who come from families who have self-employment because they can walk a mile in their shoes. They knew, and like, if you hear Gary Vaynerchuk's stuff, it's very much similar, right? He talks about working in his dad's wine store and everything and always having a parent overlooking him just to make sure that he wasn't screwing off or anything like that. So that's an awesome one. The other thing I would just say is that, and this is kind of a little bit of a hackneyed term, but successful people find value in unexpected places. So we have a kid who's finishing up, I think he's actually doing a degree in mathematics, super bright kid, played college club baseball and trained with us, and like just absolute genius in terms of like, he's like the guy who's going to be like the GM who knows all the stats and everything. And he wants to get some internship opportunities in baseball operations. So he sent me his resume to look over, and I was looking at it, and it's kind of like the classic, like, played Cub baseball, here's my GPA, here's my thing. And you go all the way down to the bottom of his resume. And when the kid was 9 years old, he bought and sold stuff on eBay and turned a $40,000 profit in a year. I was like, that's incredible. Like buying like random stuff and selling it for more than you bought it for. Like there's a guy who finds value in unexpected places. And I was like, dude, move that up in your resume, highlight it. It means so much more than you scooping ice cream for a summer or something like that. And like, I love seeing stuff like that. I wish more people would try to find that stuff. So one of the things that I did when I first came back from my first off season down in Florida is when I got to Massachusetts, we had hired Tony Bonvecchio, we had hired Miguel Argencio during that time that I was gone, one to replace me and one because we were growing and Tony was an awesome coach and we couldn't let him go. First thing I did when I got back was I sat down and I was like, hey guys, you know, what are things that you like? What do you enjoy doing? And I just started racking my brain to say, hey, where can I find extra value in these guys? Since then, Tony Bonvecchio's grown a women's powerlifting group that's super popular up here. That's right in his wheelhouse. He's having a blast with it and making more money. Miguel's helped me out a lot with content for Elite Training Mentorship because I've realized he's a guy who's very analytical, does a good job of synthesizing his thoughts and organizing for webinars, things like that. So I think what you just have to do is you have to look and find value in places where other people have missed it. And for me, it doubles as a good opportunity to, you know, basically empower our guys and allow them to expand their roles around here. So hire self-employed people, military people are also awesome, and then also find value in unexpected places.
Man, Eric, this as always has far exceeded anything I could have hoped for in, you know, an opportunity to spend some time with you here. I know that I picked up some great things, and I'm sure everybody else listening in did as well. So if somebody wants to learn more, you know, follow up with you, where's the best place for them to start?
They can go with Eric Cressy, ericcressey.com for kind of like my personal stuff, and that's where the blog and newsletter are. Or for the facility stuff, it's cressysportsperformance.com. One thing I should add, we always have an open door policy at our facility. So if somebody wants to come by, observe, see how we roll, be a fly on the wall for a day, we always welcome it and certainly encourage it. So that offer is available to anybody who's listening.
Well, I can speak from firsthand experience. I've had the good fortune to spend a few days at the Mass location, and it's just been, you know, outstanding for so many different reasons. If you guys listening in get a chance to, I strongly encourage you make that trip. Well, Eric, again, thank you so much for being part of this, and I'll have the links to both of those websites in the show notes. And Eric Cressy, thanks for being part of the Ideal Business Show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. We've got a special gift for our listeners. We're giving away 52 cut and paste newsletters that you could start using for your fitness business today. To get your special gift, head on over to patrigsby.com/gift.